Hey everyone, and welcome to episode 21 of Quick Cuts, a Plastic Surgery Podcast. On today's episode, we discuss posterior interosseous nerve syndrome, so let's get started. Posterior interosseous nerve syndrome is a compression neuropathy of the posterior interosseous nerve in the forearm. The posterior interosseous nerve, or PIN, is a branch of the radial nerve, so we'll start by reviewing radial nerve anatomy. The radial nerve exits the brachial plexus as a terminal branch of the posterior cord and carries fibers from nerve root C5 through T1. It exits the axilla through the triangular interval and passes around the humerus in the spiral groove as it moves distally along the arm. It then pierces the lateral intermuscular septum approximately 7.5 centimeters proximal to the radiocapitellar joint and runs between the brachialis and brachioradialis muscles. At the elbow, it passes anteriorly to the lateral epicondyle and divides into superficial and deep branches. The superficial branch is a sensory branch, providing sensation to the dorsoradial aspect of the hand, while the deep branch is the posterior interosseous nerve, or PIN. The PIN is primarily a motor nerve, supplying innervation to the supinator and the extrinsic extensor muscles of the wrist and hand, with the exception of the extensor carpi radialis longus and brachioradialis muscles, which receive innervation from the radial nerve proper. Of note, innervation of the extensor carpi radialis brevis muscle is variable and may or may not be innervated by the PIN. Although largely a motor nerve, the PIN does have a terminal branch that supplies sensory innervation to the wrist capsule. This branch is found along the floor of the fourth extensor compartment. Palsy of the PIN generally results from compression. This can be idiopathic, related to anatomic sites of compression, but can also occur secondary to trauma, such as fractures or dislocations of the radius, mass lesions like tumors, inflammatory synovitis of the elbow, as may be seen in rheumatoid patients, or iatrogenic injury. We'll talk next about the evaluation and management of the PIN syndrome patient. Your history should consider medical comorbidities, occupation, and hand dominance. In taking a focused history, it's important to ask about the onset and chronicity of symptoms. You should determine if there was any trauma that preceded symptom onset. In regards to symptoms, patients will commonly report progressive weakness with extension of their fingers, thumb, and wrist. They may also report pain in the proximal forearm, although this is a less common feature of PIN syndrome. On physical exam, you should perform a comprehensive hand exam. Patients may demonstrate weakness in finger and thumb extension. One important point to remember is that the interossei and lumbricals contribute to extension of the interphalangeal joints, so the PIN deficits primarily affect extension of the digits at the level of the metacarpophalangeal joint. Patients may similarly demonstrate weakness in extension of the wrist, particularly in neutral or ulnar deviation. Some extension of the wrist in radial deviation may be preserved due to intact innervation of the extensor carpi radialis longus and brevis. Exam may also demonstrate muscular atrophy if symptoms have been long-standing. Patients with PIN syndrome will not have any sensory deficits, as the PIN provides no cutaneous innervation. One final component of your exam to remember is to check for any masses that may be causing compression. In regards to diagnostic studies, electrodiagnostic studies may be useful to evaluate the level of nerve compression or to rule out alternative neuropathies. X-ray may be indicated if there's associated trauma, and CT or MRI may be utilized to investigate mass lesions. The first-line treatment for PIN syndrome is typically conservative. Conservative treatment includes a trial of activity modification, splinting, and therapy. This is typically given a trial period of at least 3 months before more invasive treatments are attempted. Steroid injections may also be considered if these are unsuccessful. Surgical treatment may be indicated for failed non-operative management, as well as PIN syndrome secondary to trauma or mass lesion. Surgical treatment involves decompression of the PIN and targets the common sites of compression, including the fibrous bands superficial to the radiocapitellar joint, the radial recurrent vessels, also known as the vascular leash of Henry, the fibrous edge of the ECRB, the proximal margin of the superficial head of the supinator muscle, referred to as the arcada frossa, and the distal edge of the supinator muscle. Postoperative care for these patients should primarily focus on hand therapy for rehabilitation. Possible complications of surgery include bleeding, infection, and incomplete decompression of the nerve. And that ends our discussion on PIN syndrome. Hope everyone's enjoying the podcast. Feel free to subscribe so you don't miss new episodes. You can find my entire audio collection, along with other great online resources, at theplasticsfella.com. You can reach me about the podcast with questions, suggestions, or feedback at jakemarksmd@gmail.com. Otherwise, you can find me on Instagram or Twitter at jakemarksmd. Thanks for listening. See you next time.